Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM. Talkspace.com/boom. B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily podcast on the Brooklyn Nets. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
You are Locked On Nets, your team.
And welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. I'm Gavin Shaw, joined as always by Josh Bass. Who's his favorite prospect? Alpha Kaba.
Love Alpha, love Kaba. Gavin, it's draft day. Can you feel the excitement in the air?
Oh, yeah, we're pretty close. We're on the Upper West Side of Manhattan right now, but we're heading to Brooklyn soon to try pizza on pizza, if I'm correct.
Yeah, it's more of a your thing than mine. I'll go with it and see what happens, but I'm not looking forward to the pizza or the on pizza.
Okay, we're excited about that. And I don't know if we're excited about him, but we're interested in the reports today that according to ESPN's, at least for now, Chad Ford has said the Nets have promised DJ Wilson at 22. DJ out of the University of Michigan. A pretty effective stretch four, and we kind of broke down his game today. And his strengths are really exciting. When he looks good, he looks like someone who not only could be an NBA contributor, but could be a really dynamic piece. He's explosive off the dribble. He can really shoot the basketball, 37% from three last year, and he stands at 6'11". So that combination doesn't come around all that often, but it wasn't all pros with DJ, Josh.
Gavin, when I saw that tweet by Ford and also Reed Wallach of Nets Daily confirmed that as well, I was not happy, to be honest. Wilson definitely is a very fluid stroke, but there are some major question marks in his game for me. Only averaged about 5 rebounds per game, and with his size and athleticism, that should not happen. And also only got to the free throw line 60 times the whole season, which you need to be able to play with more force inside in the NBA. And to me, it reminds me a bit of a John Lohr without that toughness. So I'm really not excited about the pick. Hopefully the reports aren't true, and there are some other higher prospects on my board that I would like the Nets to consider.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting because for me, when I look at top prospects, I always think the defining quality is that they combine brute force and strength with a really smooth game. And then you look at the guys going in the 20s, and you look in the guys that are maybe going to fall to the second round. Like, I think the defining guy going the other way of DJ Wilson is someone like Sindarius Thornwell, who's all strength, is all bully ball. Someone like Marcus Smart, if you want to think about it, at the NBA level. But if you only possess one of those two, inevitably you're going to come into issues in the NBA because there's an NBA defender to guard one of those qualities. You have both of those, that's when you have a chance to be a really effective scorer. And then that's kind of the gap between, I know we always reference Draft Express, I love their breakdown videos, and that's kind of where we got a lot of the scouting report from. And when you see DJ Wilson's strength video, you watch him and he looks incredible. But then in the weakness one, or if you just watch a full Michigan game, you see where this stuff kind of starts to fall off. And in that first video, he's hitting a lot of these turnaround jumpers, and you're saying, that's ridiculous. This 6'11 guy has kind of the Kobe turnaround game, and you're saying, how is he not a top 10 pick? And then you flip it over, you look at the other one, or you just watch him play, and that's a shot that's just not consistently going to go in at the NBA, and it's really a product of his inability to use his size to get to the rim and finish around the basket.
Yeah, you definitely wish that he has a little bit more of a dive game on the pick and roll. Most of the time he just popped, and again, very finesse game, and he's a talented player, no doubt about that. Really had a nice combination with Moritz Wagner, who decided to go back to school at Michigan. But I watched the Big Ten all year, just graduated from a Big Ten school. He drifted in and out of a lot of games, and I don't think that he has really the mentality on the defensive end to be a solid starter. And obviously, the shot is good. That's something that I could see eventually getting to high 30 percentile on threes, but I just don't see him being an all-around contributor, which is what the Nets should at least go for the home run pick and try to find.
Yeah, and I think we like two guys with kind of similar builds who I think, and one of them has a kind of a similar game And I just see the other two having more upside, and those two are Justin Patton and Jonah Bolden. We won't spend a ton of time on Patton because we essentially did a whole podcast on him, but he's kind of my ideal pick for the Nets at 22. Super effective rolling to the rim. We mentioned on the other one, one of the best players in transition in the country, probably the best finisher, at least statistically, in the entire nation last year. And obviously, he fell off a little bit after he lost his point guard, Maurice Watson, Josh?
Yes.
Yeah, last season. But on the whole, when he played with a quality point guard, which obviously theoretically yet with the Nets and Jeremy Lin, he was dynamic rolling to the basket. You see the makings of a more advanced offensive game. And I think we like Jonah Bolden for a lot of those same reasons.
Yeah, I love Jonah Bolden. Great three-point shooter, has the athleticism, goes up, finishes lobs. There are obviously some questions about him at his year at UCLA, but he seems to have figured a lot of things out now that he's in the Adriatic League. And I think coming over, he could be a great prospect. He's someone that just has the potential to not only hit those threes, but unlike Wilson, plays with force around the basket and has the potential to really lock in on D. Obviously, there are questions there, but I feel like if he can sort of get that motor straightened out and have Kenny Atkinson helping him develop, he could be a really nice fit along with the Nets' young pieces like LeVert, obviously now D'Angelo Russell, Jeremy Lin, all those guys.
Yeah, obviously Bolden a little bit older, but you're always so impressed when guys can go overseas and they actually have success. I mean, Emmanuel Mudiay played in China, so it's a little bit harder to quantify, but you look at someone like Terrence Ferguson, who theoretically is going to be a top 15 pick in this draft. He didn't do anything over in Australia, and you see Jonah Bolden was a really solid player. His per-40s were excellent, and then the biggest mark in his favor is the combination of that athletic ability, that rim roller, the guy who can really attack in transition, and as you said, Josh, the three-point shooting took 132 attempts last year. So that's no joke. We talk about Justin Patton and the three-point shooting is theoretical. He was 8-for-13 last season. You don't have to make that projection with Jonah Bolden. He took 132 threes last year, shot 40% on it. And no, that's not a guarantee he's going to be effective in the NBA, but it's more than just a promise. There's something substantial there, and that combination, that athletic ability, that's why he's one of the great late risers in this 2017 NBA draft. Another guy we watched today and liked a lot. Or Josh, you want one more?
Yeah, one other note on Bolden. He won the ABA League's top prospect this year, and the three most recent winners of that were Nikola Jokic, Dario Saric, and Ante Zizic,
right,
the Boston Celtics prospect coming over. So obviously a great pedigree with people who have won that award. I think Bolden can continue in that success and be a great player at the next level.
Yeah, so with the noted exception of Zizic, a lot of promise there. I just said that to upset Celtics fan Matthew Tonis of FanRag Sports, who is in the room. Anyways, we move on. Jarrett Allen, someone who I think really intrigued both of us. I got to be honest, I didn't talk him up a ton in recent days, and that's mostly because I didn't know a lot about him. But after watching him, I think we had a consensus that there's a lot of promise there.
Right. First thing with Jarrett Allen, great afro.
And smile, too. Yeah.
Great smile, great afro. Like a Josh Childress type fro, if you're listening at home.
He looks like there's like an NBA Jam like archetype that he looks like.
I love it. And then tons of physical potential, about 6'11 with a 7'5", 7'6" wingspan. Nice touch around the rim, good roller. Doesn't play with a consistent motor at times, but he's someone to me that was on a team in Texas without a real point guard, played with another true big man in Shaq Clear, and he's someone that I believe could really thrive at the next level playing as a center, and I believe that I have faith in Kenny Atkinson and Sean Marks all the way, and I think if they see the talent in this guy and believe that they can motivate him, he has the potential to be sort of like not – I wouldn't go as far as like a DeAndre Jordan because he's not that level of athlete, but someone who's a step below that, someone who can really provide some vertical spacing, which the Nets desperately need, because I'm not sure if Justin Hamilton or Mozgov can get up for an alley-oop at this point.
Yeah, no, he's someone who really intrigues me. I mean, just looking at his frame, there are not too many guys in the draft I'd put into that category. He just looks like a giant human being. And then you look at some of the descriptors thrown his way, and you can see it just watching him. He palms a basketball like a grapefruit, and like you don't hear that all that often, even amongst great NBA bigs. You think of someone like Will Chamberlain when you hear that descriptor. And I mean, just that body and the fact that he can get up and he does have that athletic ability, that is awfully tempting. And again, this is the type of guy, just like Justin Patton, I think there's a lot of overlap there, that in another draft I legitimately think someone in the lottery takes a shot on one of them.
And even if Jarrett Allen played at Duke or Kentucky, I think people would be talking about him as a lottery pick for sure.
Yeah, certainly. And on top of that, I kind of like, you know, when you look at a big man, I know this is a Bill Simmons thing, and it's one I wholeheartedly agree with. You kind of look at how they run and how fluid they move. And I wouldn't say Allen's elite in that category, but even when he's not, you see the ability to adjust. And I know Draft Express described it as the goofy foot finish. And I kind of, it's a little awkward, but I kind of like that descriptor because that's really what he's good at. And that ability to adjust and kind of compensate for it. You know, a lot of times when you're that big, that's the barometer for success, even at the NBA level. And I think Allen has that kind of potential. It's not all roses with him. He's not all that aware on defense and kind of similar to Patton. But with both of them, I think it's really a product of being young. Sometimes you forget these guys were true freshmen in college basketball. That's really typical that it takes a year or two for them to catch on. And that adjustment is obviously going to be even steeper in an NBA system. But eventually they get there. Someone like Allen, Bolden, or Patton are all really intriguing. All right, now we're going to go more to the long shot guys. I know I'm someone from I don't really want to talk about him because I can't without crying right now, but Kristaps Porzingis's country of Oregon origin, Andrzej Pachecznik.
Let me help you with that. Gavin, ahead, I believe Andrzej Pachecznik.
Frankie Nicotine.
not talking about Nilakina now, this is Pachecznik. But yeah, guy that 7'2", has a stroke from the outside, needs to extend his range a little bit if he wants to be able to hit the NBA 3 consistently, but it's definitely a ton of promise on the offensive end. Good touch around the basket, can rebound. Obviously, the questions with someone that big are about how they can switch on the perimeter and how they can hold up on defense. And when you get to a guy that size, obviously the comparisons to Porzingis are going to be there just because they're both Latvian, and he does not have that level of Porzingis' explosion or just quickness on the perimeter. But he's definitely a guy with that level of offensive skill that I could see Kenny Atkinson really taking a liking to.
You know, he's certainly interesting. The way I heard him described is a lot of components of Porzingis' offensive game with none of the defensive upside, and as you said, none of necessarily the athletic ability, though he can get up a little bit, and you see him have some decent lob finishes. So he's someone who's really intriguing offensively. I kind of see him in that mold of offensive first centers. Kind of, I think we talked about this two podcasts ago, guys that maybe as the NBA progresses are going to turn into six man, and maybe every team has one guy like this you can just throw out with a bench unit and they can roast their opposing big man, six man. I don't know. That's just an interesting direction the NBA could potentially go, and I could see Pachecznik's fitting in that mold. All right, now we're, again, on longer shot guys, but two we wanted to mention briefly. I know you were a little bit more ambiguous about whether or not the Nets would potentially take him, but Ike Anibogu, a guy who I don't love as much as the experts do. I see a lot of people projecting him late lottery or immediately after that, and he just wasn't all that developed at UCLA. And I get part of the appeal is the 7'6" wingspan, the fact that he is so raw, that he has a lot of athletic ability, that you mentioned DeAndre Jordan. I think he's very, very similar to DeAndre Jordan coming out of school, maybe with a little bit less lateral quickness. But there are a lot of tools with Ike Anibogu. I just didn't see a ton of production. And I think normally with those big kind of athletic rolling centers, when you look at their college tape, your first thought is, oh, they're going to be so much better in the NBA when they play with a quality point guard and when they play in an open system. Anibogu, I think, actually gets a boost the opposite direction because at least relative to everyone else in college basketball, he played surrounded by four really good shooters and with the best passing point guard college basketball has seen in perhaps a decade in Lonzo Ball. So I think he had advantages that I guess are going to be similar in the NBA level, but it's not going to be canceled out by playing against college defenses.
Yeah, I definitely agree that the situation was ideal for him. And as you said, like a lot of these big men in this draft, it's always talk about filling out their frames. How will they fill out? Do they have the shoulders that will allow them to add weight? But Anibogu is already jacked. Like, the dude looks like Dwight Howard. Everyone compares him to Greek God. I wish I had that body. Everyone compares him to a mini Dwight Howard, and just very raw. And as we mentioned with DeAndre Jordan, when he came out of college, it was not a high percentage chance that he was going to hit. Maybe 15 or 20% that he would become the type of player he is today, where all-star caliber. And the other, the rest of that was that he would possibly flame out of the league or maybe become like a backup. So it's unlikely that Anibogu does reach that ceiling, but he has the physical tools necessary. Now, will he put in the work and will he be put in the situation to make that happen? I feel like the Nets are going to go for a big man who is a little bit more developed on offense, especially. They prefer a lot of cutting and motion style offense, not necessarily just a straight pick and roll attack. So I'm not sure how Anibogu fits there.
You see, my whole thing with him, and maybe, again, this is just a product of having that type of body, but I just don't see the fluidity with him that I see in someone like Patton. And Patton's not all the way there yet, but I see the potential for someone who can switch on the perimeter and guard other positions. Anibogu, a great rim protector, but again, the whole direction the league's going, you're playing five-out basketball. If you can get him away from the rim, I don't know how effective he is defensively. And if he's not effective defensively, the only pro at that point is his rim-rolling ability, which is certainly a big part of offensive basketball, certainly a useful skill. Not enough to justify, I think, where most people are projecting him, and a reason I don't think he's necessarily the cleanest fit on the Nets. That being said, I wouldn't be totally shocked if they went in that direction, because you talk about that upside, and when you talk about that upside, that's what we've been emphasizing the Nets are going to look for this whole time, and I'm still of that camp. And if they potentially trade up, who knows? Two more guys we're going to finish up with. We'll say the big name for last. I'm going to hit up Bam Adebayo right now out of Kentucky, a consensus five-star recruit out of high school. And he lived up to the hype to some degree, but pretty clearly overshadowed by those two guards there, Malik Monk and De'Aaron Fox. And I think the big thing with Adebayo is it seemed like he was falling into the second round. Game was just, I know he got those mini or baby Dwight comparisons, but not that tall, kind of like Dwight Howard, who's I think only like 6'10". But I think that the selling point for him, at least recently in workouts, has been he's shown off a three-pointer that you really didn't get to see in Kentucky. And I never totally buy that when guys flash that with no defenses. But I know just covering the Suns the last couple of years, Tyson Chandler can hit 10 three-pointers in a row with no one's guarding him. He's never going to take one in a game. Dwight Howard spent summer shooting threes, and he releases these stupid videos where he'll make eight in a row. It doesn't matter if you can't do it in a game, and Bam can show any of that at the college level. So I'm not sure how much I see of him as being a legitimate NBA big.
I think I'm going to start calling him Bam Adebayo, as you just said. I love that.
I mean, it's with the shot. You got to call him Bam.
Yeah. Bam. He hits bombs. The thing with Adebayo for me, or Bam, is that Bam really was given the opportunity to post up a lot in college. That's not where he succeeds. A lot of the times, Kentucky just forced it into him a lot, and they didn't have a ton of spacing. A lot of their forwards weren't able to shoot threes. Derek Willis is really their only marksman besides Malik Monk. So I think if he's in more of a attack where it allows him to just kind of focus on his finishing abilities, he could really succeed there. Questions for me about him as a rim protector and rebounder. Only average about 8 rebounds per game, not even a block and a half per game. With someone with that athleticism, you'd expect him to be a little bit more explosive at that end and put up some better numbers. And obviously, rebounding is an indicator that always translates very well to the NBA. So that's definitely a point of concern for me.
Okay, and we'll finish up with, I think, the biggest name left on this theoretical board, Harry Giles, the guy who at the beginning of the season was projected number one pick in the draft. I think just about anyone who follows basketball at the prep level heard his name way before they ever heard Markelle Fultz's. Tore his ACL his junior year of high school, then tore it again his senior year of high school, suffered another knee injury in the offseason with Duke, and he just clearly was not the same guy, didn't have the same confidence. And the qualifier there is that's pretty typical with an ACL injury. It takes a year to fully come back. It's just that if he had averaged 16-8 and looked a little bit less explosive, I think he'd still be a top 10 pick. The matter was I guess the issue is he didn't make any type of impact as Duke. They'd play him off the bench. He'd occasionally be a finisher. He didn't show really any other flashes of his game. Is there anything in there, Josh, that you still really like and you see as someone who would be a good fit on the Nets?
Yeah, I mean, I think Giles, if he hits, he could be a star. Is that likely? Probably not. But he's someone to me that really it was baby steps for him at Duke this year. He would get an offensive rebound and get fouled in the putback, and I've never seen a bench cheer so loudly. Krzyzewski was delighted when that happened. But he really needs to get that quickness back, because right now he really struggles moving his feet on the perimeter. He doesn't have much of a perimeter game to make up for that. So for me, he's a very limited prospect right now. Obviously, if he can maintain some of that athleticism, if he can get that back, he becomes much more intriguing. But are the Nets going to want to swing for a home run? They kind of just did with D'Angelo Russell. We'll see if that works out. Maybe they go for a bit of a safer pick.
All right. So it's draft day, Josh. I got to ask to finish this up. You wrote down, and you're trying to prompt me to say one bold prediction for tonight. I was just going to ask you who you think the pick is, but take that in either direction.
Okay, I'll go both. You know what? We're always getting a little extra content here. The pick, I want it to be Jared Allen. I think it's going to be DJ Wilson, though, just because I trust Chad Ford, Reed Wallach, those guys. But for me, bold prediction, Andre Drummond gets traded tonight.
Wow. I kind of like it. I kind of like it. And my bold prediction is that Kristaps Porzingis does not get traded tonight. And that might be wishful thinking on my part, because we've heard that there are some offers out there. But I'm saying Phil, despite his idiocy, holds strong and keeps Kristaps on the New York Knicks. And I think the consensus has been, and this is what, before the whole craze last night, both Zach Lowe and Howard Beck reported that the Knicks weren't actively shopping Kristaps, even though we've heard some things to the contrary. Since then, they were just waiting for offers to come in, and they made the standard for those offers extremely high. Matthew Tonish has shown me a tweet saying that a Knicks and Suns deal for Kristaps Porzingis is close, so I'll throw that out the window, and I'll just give you my draft pick for tonight. I want it to be Justin Patton. I'm not sure if it'll fall down that far, but I could definitely see the Nets working a deal to trade up a couple spots, and I think, as I said, and I don't want to go over it again, but his combination of upside and just a couple of definitive NBA skills already, I think, is the perfect combination of what the Nets need and what the Nets are looking for. So that wraps up this episode of Locked On Nets. I encourage you to subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Please leave a review. We really appreciate it, and it allows us to keep doing the podcast on a day-to-day basis. Finally, highly encourage you to check out NBADraft.net and their old draft comparisons. A lot of those were pretty incredible. I think, what was Deshaun Stevenson, the Michael Jordan?
Deshaun Stevenson, Michael Jordan, and my favorite is Nene, was Hakeem Olajuwon.
Who was Marcus Fizer again?
Charles Barkley.
Okay, there you go. NBADraft.net, Locked On Nets, equal levels of credibility. We'll see you. And next time we talk, the Nets will have a new player.
With the holidays around the corner, now's your chance to save time and money at Safeway's Stock Up Sale. Plus, earn 4x gas reward points on participating items. Look for tags on items like Honey Nut Cheerios. Select varieties are 4 for $8 with your club card. And select varieties of Betty Crocker Cake Mix, Brownie Mix, or Frosting are 10 for $10 with your club card. Maximum gas reward at participating Sunoco stations is 20 cents per gallon and $1 per gallon at Safeway stations in a single fill-up up to 25 gallons. Other restrictions, limitations, and exclusions apply. For complete details, go to Safeway.com.